Zen Man's Pillars, Case 31. Introduction. The unique dynamic of transcendence. A crane soars into the sky. The unique road of confrontation with reality. A falcon passes the next country. Even if your eyes are like comets, you still don't avoid your mouth being bent down like a carrying pole. But tell me, what doctrine is this? Case, Yunmen said, the ancient Buddhas are merged with the open pillars. What level of activity is this? The assembly was speechless. Yunmen himself said for them, on South Mountain, rising clouds. On North Mountain, falling rain. Verse. One path of spiritual light has never been concealed from the beginning. Transcending perception and objects, it's so, yet nothing so. Going beyond emotional assessment, it's good, yet nothing's good. The scattering flowers on the crag, in the bees' houses they make honey. The richness of the wild grasses, in the musk deer they make perfume. According to kind, 3 feet, or 10, or 6. Clearly, wherever you contact it is abundantly evident. Well, today is the first day of our 5-day sesshin, and I want to thank all of you who came last night. It was really exciting to see all of you arrive, and I know a couple of you had long work days and had to get in quite late, and I really appreciate your being here. I'm really excited that you could find a way in your busy lives to take this time out and practice Zen. And I'm just thrilled that you could make it. I know some of you have extraordinary responsibilities. A new job or a lot of important, complicated tasks due. And family responsibilities. Also, all of this, if you aren't careful, pretty much those basic responsibilities can take up all your time, and something like sesshin becomes impossible. And yet, you've done the impossible. You've come here, and I'm just thrilled that you can be here. I want to thank also the people who are here for the first time. This is going to be probably a challenging experience for you. So far, so good. I've really been impressed, by the first timers here. We have, you might have noticed, behind you, 3 chairs. Those chairs have a particular purpose. Let me just say that it might happen to you as you're practicing here over the next 5 days that you reach a point where you just feel that you can't sit on that mat another minute. And I want to invite you to, when you reach that point, not to think about getting in your car and driving away. But I want you to think about sitting in a chair, okay? Because there's something, you don't have to choose between the two extremes, staying and going, right? You can sit in the chair and get your second wind. And you might feel, perhaps, that sitting in the chair is kind of wimpy, but Probably many people here have sat in the chair, and if not in this sangha, in some other context. So there's nothing to be ashamed of if you reach a point where you just can't continue. Just get up, sit in the chair, and when you're ready, you can get out of the chair and come back to your cushion. And I think you'll find that being able to sit in the chair helps you to put your discomfort in perspective. When you're sitting on the cushion at a sesshin, we're sitting 8 hours a day, not counting, say, sutra recitation and things like that. So we're putting in a lot of time on the cushion. And so you get up in the morning, you sit, at 4:30, which is a shock to some systems. You know. And then you, have a half an hour to get all set, come in, sit down, do the sutras, bathroom break. Then we sit for an hour and a half, which is rather unusual. A lot of Zen groups would have a walking meditation in between. We just sit for an hour and a half. And then we have a break, and then another half hour. And it's possible under those circumstances to become a little bit obsessed with how uncomfortable you are, because first of all, you're repeating this process of sitting on the cushion. It's just you're maintaining the same posture or postures all during the day, and this produces standard kinds of muscle fatigue, just like if you were running. The lactic acid builds up in your muscles, and ordinarily that wouldn't cause so much distress, but if you were just sore from working out, you might go home and watch the tube, and every once in a while you'd realize you were a little sore. That's generally speaking, people get sore muscles all the time, but they're usually distracted by all kinds of events in their lives. We're sitting on a cushion, and you're watching your breath. If you're a beginner, you're just watching the breath. And so basically, you watch this breath, and then you watch this breath, and then you watch this breath, and then your mind just starts to drift, right? And it goes through thoughts. You think about, what am I doing here? Why did I come here? Am I going to think about something at home? You think about something 30 years ago, in your case, 20 years ago. Your mind, and then you suddenly goes, I'm not meditating. Right? So then you come back to your breath, and that starts again. And at some point, you become aware, hey, my knee hurts. There's really like only a few things that occupy your attention. One is the breath, which is where your attention is supposed to be focused. One is this mental stuff that's coming up, which is not a good idea to focus on too much. And then there's the pain, right, or the discomfort. Discomfort is a euphemism for pain. Right? So pain. Okay. And so, you have nothing to focus on except those sort of three things. There's no television, for example. And the pain begins to seem bigger than it is. This is, really true. And it begins to seem, really like, oh my God, my leg. If this is your situation, let me just point out that the pain you're experiencing is really like minor, honestly. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I have arthritis, but not from sitting. I have arthritis for various reasons. But sitting never hurt me at all. Until I developed arthritis, I used to run like 7 miles every 2 or 3 days. So this won't hurt you at all, let me assure you. But it may feel pretty dramatic. And please don't be deceived by this. It's a kind of optical illusion produced by having very few things to think about. It's really not a great deal of pain, it's just muscle fatigue, right? And the proper response to this discomfort is to drop deeper into your concentration. So when you're sitting on the cushion and you're watching the breath and you begin to feel uncomfortable, one thing you can do is move. And that's always an option, but it's not the best option. Because I think what you'll find is that if you move once, you'll move a million times. Right? So you're sitting there, you're thinking, oh, that's really uncomfortable. And so you move. And then you think, well, that'll solve the problem. But then, you know, the discomfort's back. So then you can move again. Yeah? And then that knee's okay, but now it's this knee. And then you can move again, right? And then it's the back. You know, so pretty soon. And it's like never comfortable. You can't get comfortable on this damn cushion. And actually, this too is a function of the limited number of things you have to occupy your attention. Because the truth is, there's no position on earth which is entirely comfortable. I don't care what kind of chair you have, really. I mean, lazy boy, bring it on, you know. You sit there for 9 hours, you're going to begin to hurt. It's going to hurt. I've dealt with people who are, like bedridden, you know. And they develop, you think you're pretty safe in bed, right? You know? But they develop sores. People develop bed sores. It's a big problem, and infections, just from lying in bed. So it's just that you don't have much to think about. And you begin to notice something which is a fact, that there is no condition of existence which is entirely satisfactory. You know, that's the darndest thing. You know, actually, the Buddha started his career by pointing something out, which is that if you're alive, you're going to encounter suffering. And usually this is not how people get introduced to Buddhism. You know, when people get, and it's not how I got interested in Buddhism. You know, I got interested in Buddhism reading National Geographic magazines. And looking at pictures of Tibet and China and thinking about mystic monks in the temple flying around, Can they walk through walls, and sending electric charges to each other through their arms, And this is actually how Buddhism is sometimes marketed, right? Pictures of the Dalai Lama. I mean, the Dalai Lama is a great guy. He's always smiling, happy, apparently happy, and unlike Zen people, the Tibetans wear these beautiful colors, and their cushions are bright colors, and there's all these pictures of guys floating on clouds above the, these tankas have pictures of meditation masters floating in the sky. It's so cool, So this is sort of what I was thinking. My entry into Buddhism was through, reading about mysticism and shamanism. I remember I was an anthropology major, double major in English and anthro, and I was a student of anthropology of religion. And I was very interested in, Indian shaman, these people who took, peyote and things like that. I just thought, this is so cool. So I got into meditation sort of from that direction. But the Buddha didn't start by talking about amazing experiences or, floating, telepathy. He said, there is no condition of existence which is entirely satisfactory. And in fact, suffering is characteristic of every one of them without exception. Every one of this is like we Americans think that this is not so. This is sort of like based on our culture. You know, there are many things I love about American culture, but you know, when it's too hot, we think, I've got the solution, air conditioning, right? So we build an air conditioner. And if it's Rutgers, you know, when it's 80 degrees, you build an air conditioner that's so powerful that it takes the temperature down to about 50 degrees, you know? So everybody's running around with a coat on in the building. So it didn't work out, right? You know, we thought it would work. We thought we could eliminate this, you know, too hot, no problem. Okay, too cold, no problem. Heater, right? So this is sort of like modern mindset in general, a very American mindset. You know, we're going to get to that place where it'll be satisfactory. So my house will be heated, first of all, and air conditioned, and I have my lazy boy, right? And I have a changer, so I don't even have to get, you see, I'm from the old days when you actually had to get up and turn the TV. And in my family, people were so lazy, they'd argue about who was going to get up and turn the camera. Right? You know? So now it's just a flick of the finger. You don't, you know, it's wonderful. So you think, now I've got it, and now I'm comfortable. But it's not going to work. I swear to you, it's not going to work. Your lazy boy is going to drive you crazy. TV is going to drive you crazy. Your house, being in your house, is going to drive you crazy. Somebody came to see me recently, and you know, I'm glad the dormitory is heated, but it's heated. I don't know about you, but it's heated with a vengeance, isn't it? It's like last night I woke up in the middle of the night and it was like I thought maybe the place was on fire because it was so hot. Oh my God, you know. So I opened the window and, you know, the cool air was sort of trying to get into this hot room, and I opened the curtains and it was just like I could just, you know, I tried to get just a whiff of cold air, you know. This is just how it is. There's no satisfactory condition. And we're so convinced this is not so. You know, we modern people are just so convinced that we can beat the system, right? It's just the way we are. So, you know, basically we've created all of these wonderful labor-saving devices, right? Like the car. You know, you used to, in ancient times, in Japan, for example, and in China, too, you know, people used to go to major temples for sesshin, and they used to walk the whole way. So in a place like Daitokuji or Nyoshinji, you know, when it was sesshin time, all the monks and nuns from all around would walk all the way to the temple or to their mother temple, right, and practice sesshin. So, you know, we all get in our cars and drive down here. Imagine if you had to walk for 6 days to get here, right? You know. And we, you know, this is a good life, right? You just get in the car. I mean, I have a car. You know, I love it. You know, I drive all over the state of New Jersey, you know. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to get in the car and drive down here and have sesshin. But, you know, actually, I spend a great deal of time in my car, you know. And it's not that fun, in my opinion. You know, actually, if you spend enough time in your car, you realize driving is not that fun, you know. And there's this other element, too, which is global warming, you know. So it's like, it's great to drive a car, it solved one problem, but it created a number of other problems, right? Including like urban, you know, sprawl, it's just eliminating all the forests, and also really serious emissions problem. So it's like we try to tamper with the environment, you know, and yet it just, in my opinion, it's never going to work out. Or at least that was the Buddha's opinion. And so you're in this situation where you're never going to be able to find the posture that's comfortable. It just doesn't exist, you know. And so then the question is, well, what do I do? There's a wonderful saying in Zen that goes like this. When it's hot, let the heat kill you. See? When it's cold, let the cold kill you. See? I think that's so profound. That this is a little dramatic, I admit. You know? But But it's like this, you know. You know, when it's really hot, just being in the moment is uncomfortable. And if you can change your mindset, your mental state, suddenly the hotness of hotness of your environment, the heat of your environment, ceases to be a problem. Right? Same thing with your cold. You know, nobody likes to be cold, but you know, there is a state of awareness in which cold ceases to be a problem. It may seem hard to believe, but it's true. And also, there's a state of mind in which pain ceases to be a problem. And that seems maybe impossible. Right? But it does really exist. It really does exist. You know, when you're sitting on the cushion for hours a day, you become, because you don't have much to think about, you become sort of obsessed with your pain. And your mind returns to it over and over again, and you can move around trying to find that satisfactory position. But there is an alternative, which is to sort of change your state of mind, your mental state. The basic Zen practice is called Susoku-kan, Susoku-kan in Japanese. It's a breath perception meditation. Right? So it's very important to have a straight back, and you want to breathe through your dantian, your hara, that region around your navel. Now, you know, people don't take it seriously when I say you should breathe through the region around your navel by contracting your abdomen. But it's tremendously important. If you don't work with your hara, your dantian, you will have much less energy and much less ability to deal with your pain. So you should make a point of contracting the muscles around your abdomen. It doesn't have to be hard, it could be soft, but you don't want to neglect to do it. It's very important, as you will see. You know, working with the hara gives you incredible concentration. It might not seem logical that contracting your abdomen can help your concentration, but please forget everything you ever learned in biology. The body is very well designed for meditation. And one of the special pieces of equipment you have is this energy center below your navel. So please call on that. Use that to deal with your pain. You know, when you are sitting at first on the cushion, after a little bit of a break, your mind is fresh and the pain is gone often. So you sit on the cushion, and you think, oh, this is not so bad, right? And of course, in the absence of pain, a strange thing happens. You don't focus more on the breath. Your mind just doodles along. It's like, now I can rest. Now I can just sit here and daydream, right? So the mind just sort of doodles along, and you think of this and that. And all of a sudden, you're thinking of this and that. You're thinking, I wonder what we'll have for lunch, or maybe you're thinking about what you're going to do this summer. Or you think about an argument you had with your brother 10 years ago or something. And then there's this intrusive presence, just periodically at first. And then it becomes more and more pronounced, and that's your pain, right? And then you're alone with your pain, and it's very difficult at that point to salvage the situation. So what I would recommend is that when you get on the cushion, one thing you can be sure of, especially if you're a beginner, is that you're going to be in discomfort. So when you sit on the cushion, even if you're not feeling any discomfort at that moment, please prepare yourself, get ready, by focusing on the breath. Because the breath is going to focus on the hara and the breath, exhalation. And the breath and the hara are going to help you deal with the pain. And this is like your, you know, stance. As you begin to sit, you are going to be in some discomfort. So please prepare, get in the right stance. This is like in karate or judo or taekwondo, you have to position your body in the right way. You have to position yourself in the right way because pain is coming. Right? You don't want it to overwhelm you. So what you need to do is be in the right position, and that means activating the hara, right? Hara on, okay? And then, you know, there's no little switch, you can just start breathing and it activates. And then basically, you watch the breath go out until it's gone. And you just keep doing this. And as your awareness of pain it becomes sharper or keener or more detailed, don't follow it. So if you have pain in your left leg, the worst thing you can do is to think about your left leg. This is like suicide, right? Yeah. So don't do that. Don't allow yourself to conceptualize the location of your discomfort. Just simply focus your mind like a flashlight, put the beam of your attention like a flashlight beam on your breath, and follow the breath out until it's gone. The next breath out. Now, what'll probably happen is this. You know, you'll follow the breath out, and it's gone. And while your attention is focused on the breath, there's actually very little room, or zero room, for a pain sensation to register. See? So this is like the perfect state of mind. You just follow this out, and there's no pain. At the end of your breath, it's like you lose mental focus. And then a pain sensation arises as you're taking in breath. And then you basically want to squeeze the breath out and push, watch the breath going out. And again, pain disappears. So there's this rhythm of practice where you follow the breath out and fix your mind like a flashlight beam on the breath. And then pain arises, but it's temporary. And then you go back, the next out breath, and the pain arises, but it's temporary. You keep pushing, it's like sweeping the pain away, if you want to think about it that way, or pushing the pain away with your breath. And it comes back, but you can manage it. You can manage it. And basically, you might not be aware of this, but as you're pushing or sweeping the pain, your mind is dropping deeper and deeper and deeper into concentration. See? And what you may discover at the end of a sit is that at the end of the sit you feel very good, strangely. You know, it's not just because you can move your legs. It's because your mind is very focused now, very clear. And so this is like a mental purification. You could think of it as purification. You, every time you sweep the pain away, you're going deeper and deeper and deeper. And your mind is becoming very, believe it or not, very sweet, very clear, very placid and unobstructed. It doesn't feel that way when you're doing this. But when you get off the cushion, you'll probably feel very clean, you know. There's a very famous Chinese Chan master named Sheng Yin, who has a saying that I greatly admire. He says, bitter practice, sweet mind. See, nobody wants to be uncomfortable. Nobody wants to be in pain. But really and truly, there's no escaping suffering. And if you run from suffering, you'll run from everything in your life forever and ever. Almost every good thing requires suffering. I have a job that I very much like. It's a wonderful job. I'm lucky to have it. I've been doing it for 22 years. And I have to tell you, though, it involves a certain amount of suffering. Right? It does. I mean, all kinds of suffering. I've put in many weeks of nine-hour days. You know, I've put in years, I think, of nine-hour days. Been very tired sometimes. I've had conflicts with higher-ups, you know, and my bosses and I haven't always seen eye to eye. You know, that happens. That's painful, right? I haven't always gotten, things haven't always worked out the way I planned, you know. So it's painful. There's nothing, it's like the perfect job in a way, but there's pain. And I've been married for 30 years and I dearly love my wife, but you're kidding yourself if you don't think there's some pain even in deep love relationship. There's pain in every area of life. So if you run away from pain, you're going to quit your job. You know, you won't go on to those challenges you have to face in life. You won't be able to sustain a good relationship with other people because there's always some element of pain. In relationships with fathers, sons and daughters, mothers, you name it. There's no painless. So you know, this is number one thing in life is we can't face reality. We can't experience the world for what it really is if we're always running from pain, if we make a habit out of running from pain. So this elemental aspect of sitting practice is confronting pain. And it's not maybe what we would like. It might be better if, you know, everybody came to Sesshin and we got up at 8 o'clock and we had a continental breakfast and then we got in a circle. You know, we threw some concepts in there, you know, we talked it out. You know, that'd be nice, right? You could all go back to your room and keep little journals, you know, meditation journal, you know. That would be nice. But you know, that I, in a way, I mean, if that's your thing, by all means, right? I'm not. It's not my path, and I think that this path has a great advantage in that it puts the pain right at the center of everything. It says we've got to deal with this. This is the biggest problem. People don't experience the world for what it really is because they're afraid on so many different levels. So many different levels. We're afraid of disapproval of others. We're afraid of getting hurt. We're afraid of being disappointed. You know, there's so many different kinds of fear, and there's so many different kinds of pain, of suffering. You know, so instead of pretending that this stuff doesn't exist, we put it right at the center of the experience here. And it's like, if you can deal with this, you can see reality. And if you can't deal with this, you're going to be running from reality for the rest of your life. See, that's the logic of this. So it's very crude in a way, you know? It's just like, we're going to sit on the cushion and sooner or later you're going to be uncomfortable. Now, the function of sitting on the cushion is not to be in pain. The body is a complex system. The body is like a living system, right? And meditation uses many different elements of that system to achieve awakening. And part of the practice of Zen is a body practice, right? We don't just do philosophy out of our heads. We use the whole intelligence of the whole being, right? So Western people are very head-oriented. Right, so you know, philosophers sit in their lazy boy chairs, and they think, "What is suffering anyway?" You know, and they you know, write a few notes, and they go to the great classics and pull them off the shelf, and they write their learned treatises and so on. You know? That's the Western way. But this practice of Zen is different, right? Because it's like that doesn't use enough of the human intelligence. So you're just thinking with your tiny little mind, your tiny little discriminating mind, which compares and contrasts, is really gives you a very false picture of the world. So in order to see the world, which is really much more vast than our ideas and our language, we need the whole system. We have a conscious mind, but we also have a deeper mind, which is very much rooted in the body. You know, the body is like an information gathering system, right? And it's tied into the whole living system of life. So you know, your body's much smarter than your discriminating mind. See? I mean, if somebody throws a ball at you, you don't have to think, uh-oh, here comes a ball, right? You catch the ball before you even know what you've done. There's a super fast computer there, but your little brain, your little mind doesn't see it operating. See? So basically, when we sit, we're not just doing this so we can be uncomfortable. We're activating the whole system. The body and mind are used as like information gathering technology. You know? So we're using a whole being. And yoga, the yogic dimension of meditation is absolutely crucial. So the posture is not just designed, you know, in some devilish way to make you uncomfortable. It greatly enhances, in my opinion, it greatly enhances your intelligence, believe it or not, and deepens your perception of reality. But it does create this pain, and you have to deal with it. And so the way to deal with it is to follow the breath until you disappear on the cushion. This is called dropping the body. What will happen to you is if you're watching your breath, the breath goes out, 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 and it's gone, and then the pain is back. And then the breath goes out, 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 and it's gone, and the pain comes back. See? And even though we don't like pain, this is the ideal situation because we drop deeper and deeper and deeper into concentration, into samadhi. Now, if there were no pain, actually, human liberation would be almost impossible. I mean it. If there were no pain, we would never be free from our illusions. So pain is a great piece of good luck. Even though nobody likes to be in pain, it brings us closer to reality. It just does. So you're sitting there, you're feeling pain, and you push with the breath. Sooner or later, what's going to happen to you is you're going to drop the body. And what that means is that if you're in deep samadhi, you're going to begin to feel this unshakable calm inside yourself. This unshakable calm. And it's like the eye of a tornado. See, everything around you is whirling and whirling, but this is totally still. And it's like, you know how in a hurricane or in a tornado, I guess I should say the eye of a hurricane. Years ago, when I was living in Southern Virginia, a hurricane hit our base. We were having some kind of like 4th of July party at the officers' club in the base pool. And a hurricane came on, and it was this terrible storm, and we all went into the men's room. We had like a shower room. And everybody from the base, you know, the general was there, everybody. You know. Everybody was crowded in here in this raging storm. It ripped trees apart. And I remember we all came out when we were in the eye of the storm, and the sun was shining, you know, the water was covered with leaves. It was very beautiful, very peaceful. You never would have guessed there was a hurricane. And then it came back, see. So the thing is, inside your, if you follow your breath, and you just keep doing this, you're going to reach this place which is still, and you feel like you're dropping away, like everything is dropping away. And you may even feel like your body, the sensations are disappearing. You may feel like you can just feel sort of pieces of your face. Everything else may disappear, or it just sort of some body sensations are still present and hearing. But you may feel like you're floating, or like you're an eggshell, spider web, things like this. You know? So this state is difficult to achieve, but once you get there, it's easier and easier to get back. You know, so you just want, it's going to take some work, but you want to enter this state of deep samadhi, deep samadhi. And the road to follow is the breath. Now, for people who are to finish the breath perception koan, everything I said today still applies, right? Absolutely nothing changes, you know. You finish the breath perception koan and mu is not really any different, you know. You work with your hara, go into that blankness. You know, the ideal situation is to make a kind of, I've been calling this a chain of mu, right? So you say, mu, right? And when you say that, your mind should be blank and dark, see? And then at the end of your breath, you're lingering in that blankness as you draw your next breath. And in that little space, like thoughts spring up like sprouts, right? Little sprouts of thought, right? And if you don't go back to mu, those little sprouts begin to push up and luxuriate and turn into branches growing all over you, right? You know? And you can get caught up. You can say, oh, this is interesting, you know. Why did he say that anyway, you know? Boy, I'd like to go to Mexico again, you know? that's a wasted opportunity. You know, you're here at the sesshin, the precious sesshin. Now, we're all human, you know. The mind gets tired. It's hard to maintain this concentration. But ideally, you say, whoa, see, mind is blank and dark. And then, before there's even a chance for those little sprouts to start springing up, you're back to the mu again. See, and then you're back to mu again. And, you know, at your best, when you're really in the groove, you're not giving any space for thoughts to take root. See, they just start to come up and then you cut them off. And then they start to come up and you snip them off, you see? And you just maintain like this chain of mu, 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 mu. This is practice, right? And if you do this, all kinds of wonderful things will happen to you, including making progress on your koan, right? And if you don't do this, you'll just your thoughts will luxuriate and cover you up, and reality will be obscured, right? So I'm not trying to guilt trip anybody, but it's very important, if you're here, that why not take advantage of this situation, right? And it is true, people get tired. After a while, you just can't, you know, you get tired. The mind says, I can't say another move, right? But the odd thing is, in both the case of people who are doing breath perception and the case of people who are doing move, it's like lifting weights, right? You know, I'm 54, and I've noticed that my body is losing a lot of strength, you know. And so I bought a set of weights at Kmart, and I'm lifting weights a couple times a week, three times a week, and I'm turning into a mighty weightlifter. I've got 30 pounds on the right and 30 pounds on the left, you know? And I get them over my head, it's like, argh! Okay. So when I was young, I used to carry shingles up on a roof. I put them on my shoulder and I'd go up the ladder and I did that all day long. But I've lost a lot of strength. But you know, already I feel strength returning, you know? I've only been doing this since you know, just for a couple months, but I feel, I don't think it's just psychological. When I lift things, I feel a little bit more in control. And it's the same thing with this practice, you know. You develop mental muscles, right? You develop great concentration. And it's the same process, right? You know, you just have to say, I have the barbells sitting on the floor, I could look at them, walk around them, you know, look out the window, you know, have a cup of coffee. I feel stronger already, you know? But I'm not getting any stronger, right? I've got to actually, you know, and I myself do not like pumping iron, as they say. You know, we muscle men call it pumping iron. I don't like that. It hurts. It's painful. But I have to do it or I'm going to be a weakling. You know? So it's the same thing with zazen, you know. You have to build up your zazen power, your mu power, and your breath power, you know. And the more you do it, the stronger your mind becomes. You know, I myself, you might think that I don't have any pain when I sit, but that's not true. I have just as much pain as you do, honestly. My secret is a strong mu muscles, right? You know, when I feel pain coming, I think, uh-oh, I'm going into mu. And I just go in and I just stay there. And I stay in there, focused, empty. I don't let a thought grow, you know. And this morning, my legs are tired. This is day 3, right? So I just stayed in there. I was like relentless today, you know, because I just don't want to be in pain and I don't want to waste my time, you know. So just like mu, 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 mu. And boy, I felt like a million bucks. It's just, wow, what a life. It's wonderful, you know. So, beginner or old hand, it's the same story, you know. We're all in the same boat, you know. You can do this for 30 years, you can do it, this might be your first session, you know. But you'll get better and better at this. If you just follow the path, everything will work out. You know, it really will. There's no such thing as a talent for enlightenment. You know, consciousness itself is fundamentally enlightenment. Absolutely. So all we have to do is clear the obstructions. And we don't clear the obstructions by following them all day in our minds. We clear the obstructions by using the breath or by using mu. And they go away naturally. And when they do, prajna, paramita, arises automatically, right? Wisdom arises automatically. So, what a wonderful deal, a great deal for us. What does this have to do with the pillars, anyway, in the koan? The ancient Buddhas are merged with the open pillars. What level of activity is this? This is about how do we become one with reality? How do we become one with the world, see? And we become one with the world by taking away, by taking away. So basically, if you focus on the breath, everything disappears except for breath. And when you finish your sit and you go outside and you look around, everything seems so beautiful and alive because you've purified body, mind, and heart. And if you're working on your koan, and you're cutting away everything and you're entering deep mushin, you get off the cushion and you go to breakfast or lunch and you eat the food and it's like heavenly ambrosia, right? You think, God, it's so good to be alive. It's just so great. Humans secrete dreams the way oysters secrete shells, right? For the same reason, to protect ourselves. But finally, we can't even tell what is illusion, what is dream, from what is real. You know, we're surrounded by dreaming. So we cut away, cut away, cut away, and then the world in all of its beauty, all of its wonderful beauty, is present to us. And this energy everywhere flowing around us. It's just beautiful. Yunmen said, the ancient Buddhas are merged with the open pillars. What level of activity is this? He's saying, what state of mind is it in which you're unified with the world? The assembly was speechless. They were all thinking, I'd really like to go to Mexico. No? Not paying attention, not practicing. Assembly was speechless. Yunmen himself said for them, said, not in Mushin today, eh? He said, on the south mountain, rising clouds. On the north mountain, falling rain. The world just as it is. Cut away, cut away, cut away. Verse. One path of spiritual light has never been concealed from the first. The world is hard to believe because we're so deeply in dreaming, but this world is heaven. This world is Buddha. Even the pain in your legs is helping you wake up. Transcending perception and objects, it's so, yet nothing so. Going beyond emotional assessment, it's perfect, yet nothing's perfect. The scattering flowers on the crag in the bee's house, they make honey. The richness of the wild grasses in the musk deer, they make perfume. See, bees turn honey, bees turn pollen into honey. Musk deer turn grasses into perfume, and humans turn suffering into enlightenment. According to kind, 3 feet and 10 and 6, we each have our, we each do our little things. Clearly, wherever you contact it is abundantly evident. The everything is our rice. We eat it and turn it into light. You know, that's what we are when we're really practicing. So let's practice.